This is Mike J, and welcome again to our R&D process. It's a bit messy at times. We apologize for that, but I want to work like this for now because it's just easier to be able to do that. The things that we were talking about is a few logistical things in terms of mechanics. Before I jump back into that, what we'll do is give you this quote. I was watching The Accountant. I don't know if any of you have ever watched that movie with one of the Jack Ryan guys. What's his Affleck? Is it Ben Affleck? Yeah. Is it Ben? I don't know. Anyway, it's a very interesting movie. It's about an autistic guy. And that's interesting because my grandson is autistic. So anything along those lines piques my interest. But he made this quote kind of under his breath. And he was talking about, this thing about that people really don't see other people how they are. And I grabbed it and put it here because it's such an important reminder for me. Sooner or later, different scares people. And it's a timely quote because coming into that, what I realize is that the way we're doing things right now is very different. But it's important for me to be able to do them both as an extrovert and as an intuitive and someone who is not linear and literal, to be linear and to be literal as much as I can because I can't. And so that's all jumbled. I can't even explain it in a linear way without jumbling it all up. But the idea there is to talk about it in a way that other people can at least find their way. So I was talking with Gary, who's kind of running the show behind the scenes, about making sure that we don't let the calls get too long so that people don't have a disincentive to not watch them. And so I was going to say, Gary, before we turn the recording on, but I'm glad I turned the recording on because obviously we want people to be able to see what it's like in here working with quote unquote Abnormal. The idea that we don't want the recordings to be long. And my thought is that we need to look at a format again in splitting up the calls. And I know that causes us logistical effort and issues, but like we have tried to split up these calls, at least figuratively, pragmatically, we're not always doing that because it doesn't work out and we're still messing with the whole process. At the same time, what I was thinking, Gary, is we got to make sure the calls really don't run over 40 minutes and that we are able to split them up. Now, my thought is, and we're talking about the Listen Light program that's coming up, starting, I think it's going to start February the 24th. That's the last week I'm in the U.S., so I'll be talking to you from the U.S. In the meantime, we're going to continue to run these Monday calls except for the 17th, February 17th. We're not going to run that call, but we'll try to run the others. And then that, for those of you that are listening or watching before January, no, Gary, that's not January the 29th. January the 29th is Chinese New Year's for snakes. I don't know if you all track your things. It's the end of my dragon year, by the way. I was a dragon. This was my, I went from water to wood. You always go back in the last, you have five cycles and you return in your second life, which is at 60, to your home element, which was water. And I went to wood, which makes some sense. And the interesting thing is, Gary, when I'm 84, I'll go to fire. So I should really be wound up by then. This is a snake year, and snakes are interesting people. It starts January the 29th. I'm talking about February the 5th, Gary, Micah. February the 5th will be our next call. So it's not next Monday. It's the following Wednesday. And isn't that February the 5th? Anybody looking at a calendar? Okay, that's our next call. So I sent you the notes for that call, Gary, so we'll have some time to talk about that before we get into it. So glad we got that recorded so it's all there. At the same time, we'll jump into mechanics, which we've been in. Formally, I want to shift the gears here just a little bit. I have some things that I'm trying to say. I'm sure you're probably not able to follow it because you don't see the spaces between where we're together and listening on this call. So I, rather than trying to fill them in and taking up a whole lot of time, I just skip you to the next space. The metaspace is a space about spaces. And that's what we're talking about. When I was thinking about the mechanics, what I'm trying to figure out that's taking so long is where the inquiry system fits. And it fits into the metasystematic relations that are part, I won't say causing, that are part of the paradigm shift that's occurring right now. Now there, oh, I'd love to tell you so many things, but I don't even know what to say anymore in this cancel culture business. So I don't say things that come up to me that I said should say, oh, I wish you guys knew this. Well, anyway, all this mess that's happening geopolitically is necessary for us to evolve into the next paradigm. Let me say that. And so what I'm saying is, having looked at this through the work that we did at Flow and having worked through this with my clients for about the last 20, at least 20 years, maybe a little bit longer, this path of consumption thing that was generated by Bernays' work in propaganda and the work that Lehman Brothers did, sad they're gone, but interesting, don't you think? It was an investment banker in the 30s from Lehman Brothers that said, we got to change people to think about what they want instead of what they need. If we don't change them from what they need to what they want, we cannot drive the system through growth. And see, this is what's happening geopolitically right now is we are testing the limits of growth, even though every pundit I'm listening to and every person, with the exception of one or two, are saying, oh, we're not growing. We're not growing. That's bad. We're not growing. Well, and then when you say that's the problem, then what's the solution? Well, the solution is figure out ways to grow. And that's currently what is coming to a peak, a tipping point, because we have the most, we have the most growth-oriented person in the world leading the United States. For whatever goods and bads there are that go with that, we have that. So what you would expect is we are either going to grow or we're going to push the limits of the old paradigm to the tipping point. And what I was doing and what I have done since I did the apocalypse presentation, which I don't think that we have an audio of that. I still have the PowerPoint, Gary, because I refer to it from time to time, which is where I made the final decision that I will not, that I will retire somewhere else. In other words, not in the US. And that has not been a bad decision. The problem is the learning curve has been so high. I never suspected with the amount of international work and travel that I had done that the learning curve would be so high moving to a culture in the developing world. And it has been so high. It's only the last year or so that I've been able to get my feet underneath me and actually understand what has happened. And see, when you have a paradigm shift, like I promoted for myself, moving away from what I thought. I heard somebody say the other day that there are only three places on the planet where you can survive a nuclear war. Now, I know they discounted us here in the Philippines, but just to give you those, one was New Zealand, one was Australia, and one was, believe it or not, Vanuatu. There's no way you're going to be able to survive in Vanuatu because they went back to Vanuatu and they cleared the old airstrip and are putting in a multi-million, I mean, not billion, but multi-million dollar improvements so that we can land on Vanuatu and a whole bunch of those islands that we used in the in World War II. They're rehabbing those airstrips. So that's not going to survive if there's military there. Guam won't survive. But Guam is 3.5 hours from us. So what is that? How long does it take to get across the United States these days? I forgot. I know it takes 5 hours to get from like the middle of the country to Hawaii, but I haven't flown across the states for a while. So is it 3, 4 hours? Something like that. So it's about that far away. So that's pretty far. So that's why I kind of chose this middle island here in the Philippines. It's called Camotes Islands for those of you that are looking for a reference. So the idea would be is that as this paradigm either peaks or reaches a tipping point, you're going to either be forced by default or choice to change from a consumption path to a path, I won't say of survival, because that's what people are suggesting now, is that we'll go from thriving to surviving. I'm thinking that unless they destroy all of the electricity and the tools, which we may get through a magnetic shift anyway, that you don't have to go to surviving. In other words, you won't be living like Einstein said. He said he didn't know what was going to happen with World War II, but he said the people who would fight World War III, he said after World War III, they would fight it with sticks and stones rather than anything else. So I guess that's what they're talking about when they say there's only going to be three surviving areas. And then, of course, we're changing all of our nuclear doctrine. Everybody's changing their nuclear doctrine. Oh, my goodness, it's going to be interesting. Well, that being aside, questioning, which was my old term before I realized questioning would be typical of an extrovert. Inquiry is the indirect version that I finally realized that's much better, that all of the sages talk about in terms of how you should approach getting information and exchanging information. It should almost always be indirect, because direct tends to have people bring up their shields. In other words, for some people like me, you can talk to me direct and I won't bring up my shields. I'll just bring out the boxing gloves. You know, that's my natural reptilian response to fight or flight, you know. But the idea that questioning has now become an anathema, and I had to look that up myself, is an interesting thing, which then validates the fact that we had already, you know, started to embrace inquiry. You know, in my case, about 25 years ago, because I saw that questioning wasn't working that well. So just to try to work through these metasystematic relations. In other words, you've got to have the metasystematic relations in place in order for the paradigm to function. So if we're going from a generative path of, or going from a path of consumption to a generative path of purpose, we got to make sure that we put the meta relational, the meta systematic relations in place. And that's why inquiry is so important. So I continue to go back through the R&D process and look for these primes and these root areas of cause. So inquiry is purposeful, and it brings about or uncovers what is purposeful, what is possible, i.e. feasible. And then, of course, this old thing where we have to go back and say, okay, I'm on purpose, but how do I monetize that? In other words, like, I've got to monetize it enough so that if I'm by myself, well, I guess you can be ascetic, like the Buddha was. The Buddha came from, what, a very rich family. He was like a prince or something, and then he decided to give it all up and walked out and said, I'll just find food where it is. There is that movement out there, but I don't think many of us will be able to do that well. So my sense is you got to take care of yourself. And then if you have gotten into a situation where you have people around you that you have to take care of, well, then at the end of the month or the beginning of the month, or when you go to the store to buy rice, they're not going to take good intentions. So you got to figure out some way in terms of monetizing whatever it is you're doing with that. So in order to facilitate these meta-systematic levels of strategies whose tactics focus on the opposite of consumerism and its growth culture conditions and requirements. So how are you going to make that work? Now, many of us are getting long in the tooth, so why should we care? Because essentially we're going to be okay one way or the other. And if we're not, it won't matter because we ain't here. So why does all this matter? Well, what happens when your grandchildren ask you what they should do? What happens when what should you just lay it out there and say you're on your own? I mean, so that in terms of leadership, a leader is going to lead. So how do we lead this transition? I don't know exactly. I have some good ideas, I think. The reason I put the mechanics, the practical, the non-meta systematic thing there, Gary, is when someone gets the news, there should be a day zero message. Is there a confirmation message that, hey, you've signed up for the news? Do we have that in place? And it can be a rhetorical question. I just need to know. I'm writing the day one message right now. And my thinking is I do not want to be like these regular marketers and just the saying used to be when I learned this form of marketing back in the 90s, when the internet came about and people started figuring out this is a great tool to do all these things with. Basically, people would say, get people to sign up and spam them till they leave, till they unsubscribe or don't pay attention anymore. And that's the only way to do it. I don't like that. I mean, for me, I want to be an informational source, so therefore I want people to look forward to our messages. So I don't want them to necessarily receive a message every day, even though they could if they learn to go to news, which is something that I have to teach them in day one. But I'm writing the day one message. Now, should the next message, this also can be rhetorical, should it come along about 3 or 4 days later rather than the next day? I'm not sure, because when people find you, and people are drawn to you, they want information about you. And if you don't give them that information, there's a tendency for them to go on in the next 5 seconds and look for it somewhere else. So I put that question to myself, Gary, as well as to the system. What are we going to do? And when we finally get ready to turn on the switch and go out into the public and off of, basically our, what do they call that? Inner circle. There's actually another term for it, your fan base. What are we going to do? And that needs to get set up. So I just put a reminder for me and you in there. So when you see the day one message, I'm going to think, am I going to write a day five, which I am, or is it going to be day six or day seven? So that was a note to me to think, to say that on the recording so we would listen to it, so we would get another hit of it and saying, because the good thing about a recording is you listen to the recording or read the transcript and it's like somebody else asking you. So if I put this in the thing as a question, it's like a question that I need to answer. So that's how that works, at least in R&D in my idea. Gary, I put this note here as a fair use notice for you and Micah and Christine, who's the videographer. I found this fair use notice in YouTube underneath one of the descriptions or something. And this is the first time that I've seen it referred to through our law. And I'm not familiar with this section of copyright law, but what I think it says is that if you don't just copy and plagiarize somebody's stuff completely, you can refer to it and things like that. Well, the reason I put that here, and Micah, you have to grab that. And what I would do, Micah, is I would grab that and I would put it under something like marketing footers or something like that, and put that there. And what I want you to do is drop that into Grok and say, Grok, I read this. Can you make it simple for me to understand? And then put, this constitutes a fair use of any such copyrighted materials provided for in title, blah, blah, blah. And ask Grok to tell you what it says in there, and then put that in there underneath the fair use notice so we know actually what the law says. So just have Grok do that. Tell us what it means and what it means practically. I mean, does that mean I can use somebody else's stuff that's copyrighted? Well, I assume so, because guess what the AI we're trained on? Everybody's copyrighted stuff. So anyway, what does Grok say about that law? Title 17 USC Section 106A17 of the U.S. Copyright Law. The reason I bring that up is that I don't know if anybody wants this, but I know I need this. And that is, when you're researching things along with images and video and web pages and stuff like that, you'll get a video and it'll be 20 or 30 or 40 or 110 minutes or 30 minutes long. And you don't have the time for that. I mean, if you watch those long videos, I mean, if it's really important to your work, you got to watch it. At the same time, generally speaking, they're not. They have too much crap in them. And so what we're going to do as a service to me, that's why this fair use is important, is I'm going to take the video. And by the way, I saw mentioned in the upcoming chat GPT-5, Micah, Gary, that it will go into videos and do this. So Micah, we just may want to keep our eyes open for what we're going to use. Mike and I build a process that says, I send her a video and then she takes the video and she gets a transcription. Then she takes a transcription, she puts that in AI, AI summarizes that with talking points and probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 words, more or less, 400 words for a blog post, 500 words for a page, I think. Then she's going to take that summary and talking points and make another video. So I'm suggesting, and that's what I need. In other words, I need to know, give me a 3-minute video of this 110-minute video. And do I need, if I'm not satisfied with that, then I need to watch the big one. That's for my research. That's what I'm doing. And I'm finding that problem because somebody will send me a video and say, hey, take a look at this. And they won't say where in there that they want me to take a look at. And then I spend half the time trying to figure out what it is they wanted me to take a look at. So this is a process that we're going to institute. We're working on it right now, and we're going to make that available to our members, to our paying members, so they can not only watch what it is we're doing in terms of researching this stuff, but also if they're trying to accumulate information, they can watch these short videos and get summaries of these very long, big talks. Like you'll see in the videos of the next few calls, I put multiple videos down there, and that's basically for our internal system. But those are things that I'm watching, and those are the kind of things that you might see and say, oh, that's interesting, but it's 40 minutes long. I don't have time for that, you know, especially if he wants me to watch this other 5-minute one. So that's the idea. So I needed to talk that out a little bit. So that's what it pertains to. My sense is that AI has broken every copyright law in the world, but they're getting away with it. So I don't know whether they'll be called on that. I know they're being called on it, but I don't know whether they'll be punished on that or not. I don't know. I just don't want to be punished. So I want to look up this law, see what fair use looks like. This came from a professional group. I don't know if you all watched a thing called Redacted. He was an old Fox News anchor. And him and his wife set up this thing where they're doing YouTube stuff. It's very interesting. Once in a while, they have very interesting guests on there. And it's a conservative viewpoint for those of you who are leaning that way. I don't always watch it because I'm not really a conservative. I mean, I'm not a liberal, but I'm not a conservative. I guess, what do they call that? A moderate? Anyway, so I watch it from time to time. People send me things. I'm fortunate to have a couple of girls whoever interested in stuff, they send me stuff all the time. I like that very much, but I can't always watch all of it. So I decided to start this service. So I think that's what we're going to do. And by the way, Mike, I have somebody coming who's going to do that work. So what you need to do is get the process down so you can teach it to another person, and then they will do this work because I know you already have enough to do. Okay. I'm starting to write marketing messages. Well, I've been writing them for a long time, but I just wrote this tongue-in-cheek thing. I've always called myself the world's most innovative coach. And people, will laugh. Somewhere in bcoach.com, Gary, there's a whole page of all the innovations that I did way back 30 years ago in coaching. We should try to find that. I think it might even have on the page world's most innovative coach, something like that. But if you could find that someday when you're poking around in the old B Coach files, I would appreciate that because those were all the early innovations we did more than 3 decades ago that people are now, some of them just starting to talk about. Anyway, I'm a different person now, although I'm not. So what I'm trying to figure out is do I approach it this way, to get the clickbait in a place where people will click on it and say, this has to be a Fruit Loop who would say this. I don't know. Anyway, I need to see things, float the trial balloon, and then look at it and then consider it over a period of time. That works good for me. So that's why I put that in there. What I have done with helping is innovate.